Hello and welcome to the Health Detective Podcast by Functional Diagnostic Nutrition. We bring you interviews from people who have conquered the trickiest of health challenges using the Functional Diagnostic Nutrition philosophy and similar healing modalities. You're going to hear from experts who have been through the ringer with their health issues and yet managed to come out on the other side. If you're interested in natural healing and or functional medicine, congrats, you are in the right place. You can always visit us at functionaldiagnosticnutrition.com, but for now, here is today's episode. All right. Hello, my friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Health Detective Podcast by Functional Diagnostic Nutrition. My name is Evan Transu, aka Detective Ev, and I will be your host for today's show, more of a co-host, if anything, because today is the first episode in our podcast of Detective Ev and Lucy's Lunch and Learns. This is where we are going to be nerding out every other week on just fun FDN topics, starting out a little more basic. Not that this is really basic for the average person today. It's still definitely more than they know about health, but it's going to be kind of progressive. So we're very excited to get to talk to you guys about this. These will be more short and sweet. So it'd be pretty surprising if we went over 30 minutes today. We're going to just kind of give you some information to run with that you can use or apply in your own life or practice if you are a health coach. And by the way, we're on episode 320. I don't think I said that. So Lucy, welcome. I'm so glad that we are doing this. We committed to our study times together and here we go.
Good. I know. I'm so excited to be here. We've been talking about doing this for a while. So now it's actually come to fruition. It's like, see you. So yeah.
I see someone out there must like us because we've got a few live, even though we didn't tell them what the topic was. So today's topic, again, because we're going to kind of go in a progressive format here. So we're going to walk you through different topics. We're going to be discussing the differences between what has always been commonly called, in at least natural medicine, adrenal fatigue versus the stages of HPA axis dysfunction. And then we'll touch briefly on how we actually test as FDNs, why we use salivary hormone testing in our foundational set of tests as opposed to urine or blood or anything else. We'll break this down. So let's start with this, Lucy. The adrenal fatigue thing, was that something that you had ever even heard of before FDN? Because I had only heard of it lightly. So I'm just curious if that was a term that had come into your mind, have you heard it before? That's what I'm trying to ask before
FDN. I had. But same thing as you, it was kind of on my peripherals. It wasn't necessarily like I wasn't told that I was dealing with adrenal fatigue. Mm-hmm. But I had heard it. And as I was going through the course, hearing Reed, like the way he talked about it, it definitely makes sense. And I think for the whole like universe of what we work under, like functional health, I can see a lot of people getting kind of tagged with that. Oh, you've got adrenal fatigue. You're tired, like, but your results are fine. You're fatigued. Yep. It's fine. It's your adrenals. So it made a lot of sense to me going through, even though it wasn't necessarily what I had experienced.
Yeah. And not to go to the comments already, but I just appreciated you guys reaching out. We have someone saying awesome topic. We also have here from San Diego, California. Great. Glad you guys are tuning in. You didn't even know what it was. So we appreciate that.
Yeah.
I don't even think that I had truly heard about adrenal fatigue prior to learning the difference. Maybe my naturopathic doctor had said something, but I was kind of ignorant to a lot of this stuff. I was really crawling my way along trying to figure out the functional medicine thing. But when you understand the breakdown, it's obviously more complete. So with adrenal fatigue, it's implying that just the adrenals are fatigued, right? It's as the name implies. Now, the issue with that is if you actually break down what's happening in the body, first of all, if your adrenals were truly fatigued, you'd probably have something like Addison's disease, and it wouldn't be too long before you get diagnosed with that. Not that many people can. Yes, you can go years without getting diagnosed, but you definitely know something's wrong. Right. With other stuff, it kind of creeps up on you when we look at the HPA axis dysfunction stuff. So we'll kind of break down each phase for you. Now in FDN, we kind of teach 5 phases. When we went through, it was 4. So I'll start with the easiest one, and then I'll throw the second one to you. So the first one's just homeostasis. What that means is the body's in balance. This means that if we were to test you, regardless of what type of test we used, you'd come back as normal, and you are actually normal. I know all the time on this podcast and in our lives, we talk about how common isn't normal. This is the one exception. Homeostasis, if you're truly normal on there, on the blood work or hormone results there, then you are actually good to go. Now, you would probably never get tested at this time. Why? Because you feel good. And when someone feels good and doesn't feel any major stress in their body or life, they're typically not going out and spending money on tests or going to doctors anytime that they don't need to. Maybe they go for a yearly physical, that's about it. But they're never even going to know that they're in homeostasis because they wouldn't have thought to have get tested. So very likely, this is not the phase that someone who is sick is in. It would be kind of impossible. You probably wouldn't even be in this space of functional medicine if you were in this phase. So we can almost completely skip over that one because any client that you work with or yourself is going to be in one of the other phases of HPA axis dysfunction. So the second one is the acute phase. And what goes on during that phase, Lucy?
So acute, actually, you might not realize that anything is going wrong when you're in the acute phase as well. Acute phase is you're kind of running high on your cortisol levels or adrenaline even. You might not be taking care of yourself, but you might still be feeling really good because you're pumping out, your adrenals are pumping out a lot of cortisol. So you're feeling pretty good going about your day regularly, but you might start to find that you are having to compensate with drinking coffee. But I feel like this stage is really, really common for a lot of the general public because a lot of the things that start to slide, like, you know, you might start to get some fatigue, things like that, or you might get some, you know, some stomach upset or something. And a lot of that we put down to like growing old, and it's normal. These things are normal. Everyone deals with them. So again, at this stage, you might be feeling good and you might not feel the need to test. You might not have clients that come to you in this stage because it's really kind of from the next stage onwards when things start to begin to slide downhill. Mm-hmm. That's when you're really going to start to feel kind of heavy. That's the compensatory phase, right?
Yeah. And so just to emphasize this even more and talk about like, what are people experiencing? I always have used the reference, and I probably got this from Reed at some point, to be clear. If you guys don't know, Reed's the founder of FDN. He's the one teaching all this stuff. So you almost have this wired and possibly tired, but definitely wired. This might be the person that was able to go to college and do the all night benders, drinking, all that stuff, and still wake up to go to work the next day. By the time I was at college age in my health journey, I genuinely couldn't even comprehend doing something like that. I know I would have felt like crap and gotten sicker. But, you know, a lot of my friends, what they did is they went to college and they are seriously drinking 3 or 4 nights a week fairly heavily, enough that would put like most people out for a few days, even if they just did it for one night. So they're doing this, then they're getting 4 or 5 hours of sleep. They're waking up the next day to go to their part-time job or their college class. And it's not that anyone's recommending this or that it's ideal, but you have to think about this. There's something to be said about a human body that can do that without getting actually sick. If I did that even today, I would imagine I feel like hell. I'd probably have a headache. I would get a nasty hangover. It was very hard for me to comprehend that other people even could do this stuff for 1 week, let alone, you know, some of my friends, 4, 5, 6 years, they were hanging out doing this stuff. Maybe they put on some extra weight, but overall they were alive. They didn't have any diagnosed conditions. So that's how I think about how people are experiencing that acute phase. It's definitely more than college. Is there any other examples that you could think of someone being like wired and tired, but also able to maintain it?
Yeah, like a lot of like AA type personalities will just keep going. Like it can go on for years. I didn't really start to feel the lows from, you know, post-acute phase until I was mid-20s. And I was hitting it hard. Like I was basically that person that you were just talking about, like drinking, 4 hours sleep, go to my lecture. But then that flowed over into my career. Like I carried on living like that pretty much until my body made me stop. And I think for a lot of people that, you know, potentially didn't hit it as hard as I did at university, the acute phase can go on for years. Like it can just keep going until you hit burnout. And I think a lot of people, you know, you've got high flying careers, you perhaps want to start your own business, it takes a lot of work. That can also be a huge part of acute phase. You can't really, you know, start a business or be really, really career focused when you are not able to function properly.
Yeah. Sunsets 238 said, love your podcast. First time tuning in live. Great. As we awkwardly stumble along here for our first Lunch to Learn episode, we're going to have to pre-record these and play them live. No, we're doing good.
It's going to get better, I promise.
Yeah. But so we'll kind of move into the next phase here. And you know what? The one thing I don't think we actually said out loud, Lucy, I could be wrong. I don't think we actually explain what HPA axis dysfunction stands for. So that's hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis dysfunction. So you'll see the word adrenal still in there, but we look at it in this way as a tertiary issue, not a primary issue as one might see in something like Addison's. And the irony is those people probably have significant HPA axis dysfunction anyway to get diagnosed with something like that. So I'll start by covering the third phase here. So just to break down how we're explaining the phases, remember, we're calling the first phase is just homeostasis. You feel good. This person's not getting tested for anything. This person's probably not even the individual that's saying, oh, I want to optimize. There's nothing to optimize. They feel good. This is the person that genuinely is operating in a state of health, which is probably very few of us nowadays, but they're out there. They do exist. So that's that phase. The second is going to be acute. So this is where you know, you're able to produce the stress response necessary to deal with your high stress lifestyle. So you feel like it's balanced. You might not have any major symptoms, but this is a ticking time bomb. If this goes on for too long, then we get into the third phase, which is compensatory phase. And during this phase, this is particularly tricky from a testing standpoint. I wanted to make this audio and video friendly, so it would have been nice if I had a graph that I could pull up. Perhaps I will at the end, actually, so people can visualize this. But if you are thinking about a normal graph, right, you got your X and Y axis, you would be looking basically at homeostasis is green on our graph at FDN. So that's going to be right in the middle, basically. There's the upper end of the reference range and the lower, and it's right in the middle. And acute is going higher than green. So it's like picture blocks, basically. So there's this green block that's in the middle. That's good. Then the yellow block goes higher. Now, this is a really tricky phase. Because the compensatory phase, you can visualize it as an orange block. But it actually has an almost identical upper and lower reference range to the homeostasis range. This is why, or it's one of the reasons at least, so many people go in and get misdiagnosed with issues, or they get told it's all in their head or that they're just too stressed out. Oh, did you already pull this up?
Right. Well, I had it when I was researching.
These Lunch and Learns are looking better than I thought. Look at this great graph. Thank you so much, Lucy. All right. Yeah. So this is what I was trying to refer to. And if you are on audio, I'll have a link for you guys in the show notes. You can go click on YouTube and check it out here. Otherwise, I'll try to keep describing it. So you know what I was talking about now. You have this homeostasis block, we'll call it, and the upper end of the reference range and the lower end of the reference range are pretty much identical to the orange one. So then the question is, how the heck would someone possibly know that they're in the compensatory phase? So a couple things. One, this person will go get tested, or at least they know something is wrong. Remember, in homeostasis, you feel good. There's nothing going wrong. That's why we call it homeostasis. In compensatory, what it means is, as the name implies, we're trying to compensate. But we've already burnt out everything. We've gone through this acute phase. So the body still has the stress. You're still pulling the all-nighters at college. You're still trying to get 4 hours of sleep with enough alcohol in your system to be classified as drunk while going to work the next day. But the body's like, no more, Lucy. We got to stop. No more university for you. We are done. And we got to get into functional medicine and FDN type stuff. So you end up in compensatory where you still have the stressors that make the body want to produce a high stress response, but you can't do it anymore. And the result, you feel like crap. And this is when you start to see a lot of the epigenetic expressions. So people might get diagnosed with various things. They'll have stomach issues, fatigue. They're not wired and tired anymore, man. They're just leaning more towards tired. So if you only tested, this will make perfect sense when we start talking about why we test saliva here at FDN as a foundational lab. If you only tested one marker at one time of the day, you might misread the lab results and say, hey, this person's in a normal reference range. Now, you know the person's not normal. They have a bunch of symptoms, but they're in a normal reference range. And how many of us, maybe even some of you watching live right now have experienced this, how many of us have been dismissed by Western medicine where they say, oh, your labs look normal? Well, they're not bad people. They're not lying. The labs that they might have run might literally look normal. There's a lot of other things that go into someone being unhealthy, especially in the hormone category, okay, that don't necessarily get shown on standard labs that are only ran one time. So this is compensatory stage three or phase three, we'll call it. You don't feel good. You know something's wrong. The real type A's out there are going to keep needlessly pushing through this and thinking, I just need to work harder. I just need to work harder. Until we get to the fourth phase, which is not so much fun. If you're looking at it, it's red. It doesn't look pretty. So what is going on in this fourth phase? And what is it called, Lucy?
This is exhaustion. Mm-hmm. It is exactly what it sounds like. This is when you're really going to be noticing that things are not okay for you. You're tired all the time. Perhaps you're dealing with some mental health issues, panic attacks, anxiety. If you were to run labs when you are in this phase, they would not look normal. They would be on the low, low side. You are just incredibly run down. You feel like crap all the time. And you don't know why, because you're continuing to live your life the way that you always have without realizing that that is hugely contributing to to the slow, like the slope down. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're just feeling about as bad as you can be, to be honest. This one, I think this phase, oh, sorry, someone just said I'm struggling with panic attacks.
Oh, we both feel you.
Yeah, we have both. That's something we both have. So I just want to say, I'm so sorry. That is really, really hard. I've been there, you, and so has Ev, and you can get through it, I promise. But yeah, so you are just generally feeling absolutely awful and you kind of don't know which way to turn. You might also get gaslit by your doctor and have them tell you that it's absolutely fine. But yeah, this is the phase you do not want to be in, but this is the phase we get a lot of people, because this is when things are really starting to go wrong and people are realizing that they really need help.
Yeah. And this is just an anecdote. This is not like a rule by any means, but I have found if I'm working with clients or my fiance Maddie's working with clients and they're in the exhaustive phase, it is not atypical for the person to have met like a diagnostic criteria for something else at that point. That's not always the case. Ironically, Maddie was in the exhaustive phase and she didn't have any diagnosed health conditions. So that's actually not entirely true. I just didn't connect it at first. So that's kind of weird saying that out loud. I won't share her personal health history, but technically there was something at that point. So right. I have found then anecdotally that a lot of people do have diagnosed conditions, which you have to think about that. Just because you go for your yearly checkup doesn't mean you get a diagnosis. You usually get that when you feel bad enough that you and some of the people closest to you are saying, hey, you better go get checked out. You got to go to a doctor. You got to get this figured out. And so you've now taken action in your life because you feel so bad. And you actually have a label for this. There's something that we can say about your set of symptoms and we can slap the label on it of the particular diagnosis. So people, yeah, they're definitely not feeling good in this phase. I actually was in this in a very, I would say I don't know how to describe it, like a minor version of this, I guess, or an early version of this when I first got tested at FDN. And it was so validating in a sense. And I know that sounds funny for people. Like, why would you want to be in that? It's not that I wanted to be in that, but it was validating in the sense that for my very type A driven self, which I know so many people share that personality that watch these types of things or study functional medicine, it's how we get into a lot of the times is type A kills us. I thought, I'm like, I'm just not doing enough, dude. I need to work harder. I love like the motivational tapes of motivational speakers. And so I'm listening to them on repeat. Right. I'm just like, go, go, go. And it's like, my body's like, no, we can't do anymore. Right. What phase were you in when you got tested? Do you remember?
I was exhaustive as well, but like higher end. And I just want to point out that this phase can happen at any point in your life. It's not, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to happen like, you know, later on, like 40s, 30s, 20s. It can literally happen at any point in your life. It's all just to do with how much vital reserve that you have and how your body or your bio individuality essentially. And I do want to hit on Evan's point. I think there's a lot of us just push through because there's very much a culture of like hustle culture, I guess it would probably be, and like staying positive, like that toxic positivity thing, like you've always got to be happy. And I think because of that and a lot of like social media and internet, whatever, we feel compelled to keep going. We feel like there's something like it's just us. We're not trying hard enough. Maybe we need to, I don't know, read a different book, read a different motivational book, or follow someone new on Instagram and, you know, try their way of doing things and just keep going, just keep going. And that's why this kind of slide down happens, because we just keep going. We ignore what our body is trying to tell us and we just keep going because this is normal and everyone experiences this and I just need to push harder. But you don't have to do that. Your body is trying to speak to you.
Right. Phase five is pretty easy. Well, it's not easy to do, but it's easy to explain. You might not be able to see it behind the video. Basically, that's a skull and crossbones that's hiding behind that. And, you know, there's no more testing. We're not doing any salivary testing at that time. You're going to be doing a different type of testing and you're not going to be aware of it. Let's put it that way. So let's not get to the phase five, which is collapse. Even if you're in exhaustion, there's stuff to do. Sarah actually even asked, that's what she's doing. She said, LOL, that's what I'm doing with the motivational speakers. How do we heal? We will touch on some of that stuff today. I full transparency, this conversation is not necessarily as advice oriented as it might normally be with some of our podcast episodes, but we will get to stuff today, Sarah, I promise, pretty soon, actually. Wesley asked, is cortisol the only marker we see be impacted by this HPA axis dysfunction in the last phase? Now, that's a great question. So again, these are, to some degree, some of them are generalizations, because now when we're talking about any other marker, it could, I found, vary quite differently depending on the person. But here's some things I've generally seen. And then, Lucy, I'd love to hear your opinion on this. A lot of the times you're going to see people with DHEA that's very low. About roughly 5 to 10% of the time, you get kind of this weird thing where DHEA seems to go up. It almost... it's like this paradoxical thing. I think it tries to compensate for the low cortisol. I actually had that. One of my friends had that when he tested. I will say I've seen it almost universally in people under the age of 30 that got tested. I'm not saying that's a rule. Again, these are just things that you pick up after 8-9 years of doing this stuff, or 7-8 years of doing this stuff. So I'm not saying this is a rule. These are anecdotal experiences where that's usually low. You see it high rarely, and when I do see it high, it's normally in younger people. You'll also see their progesterone and testosterone out of whack. So yeah, Lucy, I mean, what are some other things that we might see? Like the cortisol is kind of how we label the phase. That's definitely the definitive part of how we would categorize someone into one of these phases. But there's other things that you see on the lab. So what would you expect to see in addition to tanked cortisol?
If someone's in the exhaustive phase, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if all their sex hormones were low. I've seen it before, especially for women, like estrogen and progesterone being low. Basically any, like they can all be low. They can all be affected, unfortunately, at this phase. It's not just cortisol. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's help out then a little bit with what we could do. And guys, this is what we're about to talk about is a whole week of podcasts in and of itself. And that's basic, right? Yeah. So I would definitely, Sarah, especially, I would recommend you go back to Lucy's interview on the Health Detective podcast, where we talked about her anxiety and the things that both of us did to heal from this, because both of us have had legitimate panic disorder. So as if panic attacks aren't fun enough, right? Legitimate panic disorder where there's now an obsession in our life around avoiding these things or fearing the next one. So what can we do for the HPA axis stuff? That's what we'll touch on. So one of the things, Lucy, that I think is so cool, it's actually not touched on in the FDN course directly, but this was something I connected later down the road. So we mentioned HPA axis is hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis dysfunction. Now, there's many things that we can do to help reduce stress, but one of the things that I love, and I've talked about on this podcast many times, is light and circadian rhythm. So everyone nowadays in the health space has heard, like, all right, blue light's bad. You probably should catch sunrise. Probably don't keep too many artificial lights on after night. That's all correct. The reason that that's correct is because our bodies and eyes pick up on this light through something called melanopsin primarily. So that's a photoreceptor that's in our skin and in our eyes. And it picks up that blue light and it sends a signal directly to something called the SCN, which is the suprachiasmatic nucleus. And when I realized where the SCN was located, it was like, bingo, fireworks went off in my head because I connected something for myself here in my own healing. The SCN is in your hypothalamus. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, we have the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. You have a lot of axes here, actually. You have the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis. You have the hypothalamic pituitary thyroid axis. There's so many things that are essential to the health of your hypothalamus. And it's not that the hypothalamus per se is healthy. Let's just say the regulation of it. And light's one of the biggest factors. So one thing that I might say tip-wise and suggestion-wise that's totally free. You don't need to go out and buy anything. You could buy some blue light blocking stuff, but you don't need to. No fancy supplements, none of that yet. We're not even discussing that. Is I'd be catching sunrise every single day to help set that circadian rhythm properly. When I was in the middle of the day, like right now, I have artificial lights on because I'm doing a live podcast with you guys. And guess what? It's okay to do this for a couple hours a day. I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. The rest of the time, I'm working near my window. I have it open a lot. I take outside breaks all the time. I go for a little walk, or if it's a meeting that I only have to talk, I'll walk while doing the meeting. So that's what you can do there. And then you dim the blue light at night to actually get good sleep. That's one thing that's going to help heal this up very quickly. It worked for me. So what are some things too, Lucy, that, again, it's tough to talk about in such a short episode, but what are some things that you would recommend people start doing to see these phases start moving in the right direction instead of moving towards scary collapse?
For me, the first thing I would address would be diet, because it's something that we all got to eat, right? We've all got to eat every day. And what you are putting into your body is essentially what you will get out. So if you are eating crappy fast food, full of sugar, like no nutrients, that's essentially what you're going to get out of your body, a crappy response. So the thing that I would work on straight away to reduce stress is diet. I would look at how I'm eating, what I'm eating. Am I eating like really fast because I've got to get to my next meeting? Mm-hmm. Or am I taking my time and chewing my food and making sure that I'm having a balanced meal versus like, I don't know, like some chips, like just like quick carbohydrates that, you know, probably going to cause a blood sugar issue, but we'll have to go into blood sugar on another episode. But just making sure that there is balance in my body, like and in what I'm eating, just to help support, to lower the stress levels, essentially, that my body is dealing with.
And I know this stuff that we're talking about can sound simple, and to a degree it is, because we're trying to keep the episode shorter today for you guys. But if your body did not get into these phases, the compensatory and exhaustion especially, overnight, this is not even a couple of weeks, this is months, if not years, of abuse on the body, and it leading to this stuff. I mean, think about what Lucy just said. You did the college thing, Lucy. You were able to do that for a time. That's a long time to beat the hell out of the body, man. Mm-hmm. And so it's not going to reverse overnight. But the good news is this. It was the simple habits that you were neglecting, most likely unintentionally, that led to this kind of stuff. That if you do those simple ones over time, that is what will start moving you in the right direction. And there's more complexity to this. You might have developed food sensitivities. So to Lucy's point, if you're sensitive to something like gluten, really common one, every time you eat that, that's actually creating an inflammatory response and an immune response. Well, guess what that requires? That requires some sex hormones. And so if that's another thing that's trying to add fuel to the fire, and you're eating, you know, cereal for breakfast, pasta for dinner, sandwich for lunch, cookies for a snack, like most Americans or most people around the world nowadays, bam, more stress until the body can't keep up with it anymore. So I would say, yeah, the sleep and light thing's huge, the diet thing's huge. And I want to be very careful with this one, because I don't think most of these can be used just generically. I think you would need a client's health history, and I think you would need some testing at the very least. But correct me if I'm wrong, do you think there are any light supplements that, not light as in light, but like mild supplements that might be safer to have people look into than not when it comes to this type of stuff?
You could probably look at, like, and again, definitely speak to a health professional before you do any of these, but, and it would kind of depend like what I was dealing with, but there were some kind of like top line things like vitamin C, magnesium, probiotics can be, just because you don't actually know what's going on, but I mean, probably wouldn't hurt if you got a good quality, not just like some random $20 one from like CVS or something. But yeah, if you were like, you wanted to improve your health and you were looking at like the light thing and the diet thing, you could probably add some top line supplements like magnesium and stuff. But like you, I kind of want to be careful about that because I do believe that we should definitely check like with ourselves, like test before we actually start taking things because it might not actually be what you need.
Yeah. Well, if anything, it's a tip in and of itself is be careful. Just run into the supplement store and buying all this stuff. You know, ashwagandha is an adaptogen. It's also a nightshade. And if someone is sensitive to that stuff, they could be spiking their cortisol just from that. When for another person, it could be a totally healing herb. So it's not to paranoy anyone. It's just to make sure we're doing our due diligence and actually testing this stuff beforehand. Mm-hmm. Sunsets238 said, I work until 10 p.m. remotely, and it's a lot of light exposure. I usually have to take Benadryl to knock me out of the reasonable hour. Oh no. Is waking up earlier and getting sunlight right away the best? So, okay. Interesting. And I want to answer this. First of all, this is just an opinion, right? This is not medical advice. But with that said, if I was in that position, and I know this is so much easier said than done, so I don't care if this takes you 2 years. The first thing that I would be doing, honest to God, if that was me, is saying, okay, what can I do either to change the job? Can I increase my skill set? To maybe get a different job? Are there other opportunities within the same company that would allow me to do something different with a similar pay? And again, none of that's simple. That's why I'm saying if it took you 2 years, but you figured it out, I think that's awesome. But the real solution here is to, you know, get the problem at its roots. And the problem is that you're working until 10 p.m. I wouldn't want to do that even if I was completely under red light and not having to deal with the artificial stuff, right? That's a lot of stress on the body. Just, I mean, I love what we do here, but this is still stressful, right? We're live. There's 17 of you watching. You know, you screw up, you fumble your words. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's a job. It causes stress. So that's the first thing. Now, with that said, you asked a specific question of would I wake up earlier to catch the sunrise? That is something that's worth experimenting with. And what I mean by that is on one end, do we want to deprive you of sleep because you're doing that? Well, no, that's pretty counterproductive. At the same time, I have found that a lot of people that dedicate themselves to catching that light early in the morning, especially if it's for a reasonable amount of time, like a full 30 to 60 minutes. I know that could sound crazy, so just start with the 30. If you can do that, so many people start to have improved sleep and find that they're sleeping easier, like they fall asleep easier. You might find for your body at this time of your life that, hey, you know what? That's actually the better version of this. It's better for me to just wake up early right now. Give it a week. See what happens. See if you don't start to notice some changes and that you feel better doing that. I would say what's really important is to do what feels best for you right now, but always, always be thinking of how do I solve the real problem here, which is I have to work till 10 p.m. So,
funnily enough, I actually have personal experience with this, not for me, but someone I care about very much takes Benadryl to sleep. And we've been working on weaning him off it. And the light exposure is really helping. But I want to second Ev's point about you need to focus on the root cause, because if that's there, like no matter what you're doing, it's always going to be an issue. Benadryl to get to sleep, I think, is like quite a common one, unfortunately. There's been a lot of studies about like Benadryl and the impact on Alzheimer's and stuff. So I would really encourage you to look into that and look at ways that you can start to kind of wean yourself off that. Again, this is not medical advice, but doing things like the light in the morning, that would probably be really helpful. The other thing is, I don't know like what your caffeine intake or anything like that, but I wouldn't advise like caffeine like after like 12 p.m. Doing things like, I don't know, you say you're working remotely, it's a lot of light exposure. So definitely I would invest in like blue blocking glasses to try and help yourself with that. That is a really tricky situation because everyone's got to work. We got to make money. And if there is a way for you, maybe not right now, but in the future to change that shift time, that would obviously be ideal.
Yeah. We had someone ask, how can we work with you? Well, normally I wouldn't advertise that directly. Lucy, are you, you're not taking clients, right? Or are you?
I'm not right at this moment, but but I'm going to be.
Give her some time. All right. Well then if it's okay. So Sarah, if you were genuinely interested in that, we do work with clients remotely, my fiance and I, so it's Bucks, BUCKS. You can rewind this if you're watching live. BucksCountyLightTherapy.com. We don't actually have a direct form for people remotely. So just You'll see our number there and see the email. You can contact us and say, hey, it's Sarah from the thing, and I'll get a hold of you. Thank you so much. Someone said, do red light therapy? Sure. This is where these supplemental devices can be really useful. So as the name of my business implies, we actually offer red light therapy in person. So it's a really helpful tool at the right times of year. We actually close during the summer where I live to give people the time to go get some real light. You know, it's free. I don't want them to use my device in the middle of June. I think that's crazy. It's plenty nice out where we live. So they might as well use that. But yeah, it can be a nice supplemental thing. I just never want someone to use the supplemental thing or supplements as an excuse to not make the real plan. Because with what that person asked, to me, the real plan is here. Okay, I don't care how long this takes. I need to figure out how to adjust this job or get into something else. And I think we stress ourselves out because we're like, well, I can't do that next week. And fine. Yeah, most people can't. I agree with that. It's just setting some deadline that might be far from now, because 2 years is still a hell of a lot better than 20 years. And I tell people the same thing if they're doing shift work. My sister got out of nursing school about a year or two ago and immediately took a night shift job. This was against Detective Ev's orders, trust me, especially as the big brother. I'm like, no. But she went and did this to get her bonus. And I said, you know what, Lane? Her name's Elaine. I said, Lane, I get that you want the sign-on bonus. I get that, you know, you don't want to have the student loan debt. I think it's all paid off now, so that's amazing. Just promise me that you don't let 1 year turn into 10 years. And she's already working on switching something up. So that's the way to do this, right? Ideal to ever do it? No. As long as you have the plan in place, you should be good to go. Sarah said, thank you. Oh, I see Tracy dropped the comment for...
I know she did.
Thank you, Tracy. Okay, guys. So one... there's 14 of you on right now, which I really appreciate. Lucy and I had originally intended for this to be every other week for only about 30 minutes. And then I'm sitting here thinking, we didn't even say what topic we were going to do. And yet you guys are really engaging and asking questions. So please, like, let us know in the comments, is this something that you guys would be interested in seeing maybe once a week? Or would you be interested in us going for a little longer? I'm going to voluntarily or involuntarily sign Lucy up for this on the spot. So let us know in the comments if you guys would like to see that. And we can prepare for that accordingly. We can come in ready with the time to answer more questions and do more stuff. Today, we will, unfortunately, have to wrap it up. But what we talked about today, in summary, just so everyone can kind of get a little recap, because this is going to help you remember it. Also, what will help you remember things is if you take the time, if you have like a journal or a notepad, just write some of this stuff down, these bullet points, and it will help you retain the information. So we learned about the difference between what was originally called adrenal fatigue and HPA axis dysfunction, hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis dysfunction. We talked about the five phases of it. So one's just normal, it's homeostasis. You feel good. You'd never go and get tested, but you don't think about testing. The second phase is the acute phase. That's the one Lucy touched on, or one of the ones Lucy touched on. So this is wired and probably a little bit tired, but definitely wired. You're rallying at college all the time. You're burning the candles at both ends, and you feel like you're able to sustain it, although you can't, but you feel like that at the time. So that's acute. Third is the compensatory, and the name implies what it is. You're compensating. The body's saying, I need to produce this big stress response because there's so much stressful stuff going on, but I can't. You've burnt me out, and now I'm starting to not feel good, definitely getting some symptoms. And then when you don't listen at that point, then you move into the exhaustive phase. And now you know something's wrong. A lot of these people have received diagnoses from Western medicine of various kinds. And then the fifth phase is collapse, which, hey, the good news today is no one's in the collapsing phase. You wouldn't be here. So we're glad that you're able to watch and listen to this. I'm sorry. I have a terrible sense of humor. So that's what we touched on. Lucy, was there any other things that we touched on that I didn't summarize in there?
No, I think you did. Obviously, we then went over and gave some people some tips for, you know, shift work and things like that, and how they can make kind of some small adjustments with like looking at how they're eating and also getting up with the sun if you're really struggling with your circadian rhythm. I think that was about it.
Yeah. And you know what? We got into the questions so much that we never even got to touch on why we do salivary testing. So I won't keep you right now, Lucy. Don't worry. We will definitely do that next time with you guys. We'll talk about the testing we use specifically for these hormones, why we do it, and what else we're looking at. So stay tuned. There might be a little bit of change of plans in how we do lunch and learn here. It definitely will be happening longer. That I can guarantee already. But it might even be happening more frequently. So thank you guys for participating. Sarah said she loves it. So hey, if Sarah calls it, we're good to go. We'll be on longer just for that. So thank you guys so much, and we'll see you soon. Bye.